This is Revolutionizing Recruitment with Kathleen Duffy, the arts of attracting, acquiring, and retaining talent. Here's Kathleen.
I'm happy to welcome Nicol Lamoureux to the podcast. Nicol is the Chief Human Resources Officer at IBM. Nicol, welcome to the podcast.
It's great to be here with you today, Kathleen.
Well, it's been fun getting to know you, and I'm looking forward to our conversation. You know, you are part of a great alumni group of HR leaders who have come out of the Industrial and Labor Relations program at Cornell, and I'm curious what drew you to that program when, as you were looking at colleges.
Well, probably like many you've heard before, is I actually thought I was going to law school. So it was a great curriculum that gave you this foundation around labor and employment law. But along the way there, the curriculum is so diverse and so grounded in kind of modern issues that I got introduced to human resources. You know, human resources isn't something that many high school students get to experience. So it was really through the curriculum there that I started to kind of dip my toe into this field. And obviously, there is an employment law component to it, but that's how it all got started.
It is interesting that, you know, it's like that's not really a traditional career path that we talk to our high school students about, and well, many of us sort of fall into it, except I think Cornell is certainly the preeminent program. There's probably a few more now, but anyway, yeah, well, we're thrilled that you have gotten into it because you have done some amazing work. And as I was learning about you, I had to chuckle. Someone described you as a glass ceiling smasher and an international pioneer in the drive towards a more human workplace.
Oh, wow. Was it my mother you were speaking to?
No, it wasn't, but I thought that was so great. And so, you know, you talk about your career journey has been a quintessential IBMer experience. So kind of walk us through your career at IBM. It's been 20 years.
Yeah. Well, sure. And, you know, kind of even just going back to the Cornell connection, I actually started at IBM as a co-op. There was an opportunity at Cornell where I could spend a semester working for a company and getting kind of hands-on experience while earning credit. And I went to IBM to do that. And from there, you know, I kind of never looked back, not only in the human resources field, but also from an IBM perspective. And what I got in those, you know, first several months was this ability of seeing how global a company could be, how the differences in HR existed around the world, and you could really impact employees on a broad scale. I also got a glimpse into how central HR could be in business strategy. And at that point, IBM didn't have a large consulting component that was coming a little later, but the talk and the discussion around talent and how talent made a difference in our products and how we interacted with clients really took hold that I got to see even as an intern.
Interesting. It, you know, I had the opportunity to speak with Christy Pambianchi, who I think had a very similar experience as you did, except she went into Corning and that it helped launch her career. So walk us through there. You're now a college intern and they extend you an offer. Walk us through the journey because you have done a lot of different things in the time that you've been there.
Yeah, so I started, they extended me an offer in now what is called talent acquisition. At the time, it was called staffing and later became recruitment. And maybe we can talk a little bit about that evolution. But I started in talent acquisition. And like many early professional hires, I did have an opportunity to do a rotational program. I then became an HR generalist and spent some time in our early services business. And my third assignment at IBM is what I would really call as a career-defining moment. I got the opportunity early on to move to Shanghai, China, and work in talent and learning in the Asia-Pacific region. To give you some insight, my husband and I didn't even have passports when we made that move. So we were new in our marriage, new in our family. We had a new baby, and we decided to take the leap to go international. After that, I really just had an opportunity over the next decade to continue to rotate into different functional jobs. I did a deep dive in compensation, explicitly executive compensation. I then had an opportunity to work in different business units. I worked in our services business unit. I did software. I did sales, all before becoming the leader of compensation and benefits, total rewards, as it's now called. And I worked in the mergers and acquisitions space. So for me, it was about really trying new HR functional areas, if I define my last 20 years, define spending time in new business areas, as well as having an ability to go global, if you will, and try different regions of the world.
Well, just so interesting. And I always wish that more organizations would be able to do that, because to expose people to a variety of different functions within there, as opposed to, kind of pigeonholing them. But I know IBM has been very creative in some other areas, and I do want to talk about that. So let's talk about the transformation, if you will, of staffing, recruiting, TA, and what does that look like at IBM?
Yeah, I talk about the name change has really also underpin some of the mission change. When I joined IBM and we were doing staffing, it really was about filling jobs. It was a pretty traditional, we have this job opening, what's the skill set? We then moved it into this kind of term recruitment. And I think what changed is we were in the dot-com era, and it really was this realization that companies woke up to that said, wait a minute, this isn't just matching supply and demand. We actually have to go do work, actively recruit to go get the supply. It was such an intense labor market. And then I think the move we've now gone into, which is this concept of talent acquisition, has even evolved the function further, where we're not just recruiting somebody for one job. We're really bringing in talent to have a longer-term impact on the company. And I think that evolution is actually good news, both for prospective candidates and employees, but also ensuring that the talent of the company can continue to move forward.
So tell us a little bit about how your TA function is structured there.
We're structured around skills and job roles, regardless of the internal organization structure. So, we may have developers that sit across different areas of the company. And when we were in the staffing or process world, we would have had the different areas, maybe the CIO's office, which was separate from the software development office, which was separate from consulting, all looking at those roles differently. And now what it's enabled us to do is to say, wait a minute, let's not take an insular view of this. Let's look at this horizontally. What are the skills and the talent that we're bringing in? And then we'll put it into our internal structure. So really thinking about big job categories around development, sales, consulting, HR, as an example. And that has allowed us to reach candidates more effectively as we think about channels where those types of skills may exist. We've also thought a little bit more of this recruiting, not just active candidates, but passive candidates. Certainly, as candidates come to us on their own, you evaluate their skills and their credentials. But how do you also get out of pools of candidates that may not be looking yet? And how do you reach them? So sourcing and really building expertise around sourcing has been critical. We also have a role that is about translating the needs of the business to our external candidates. Every hiring manager thinks that they're a talent acquisition expert. But often how they talk about their roles and their skill sets may not necessarily translate outside of the organization. So we do have talent acquisition partners that provide that translation effort to really most effectively match the needs of the business to the external candidates.
So how large is your TA function? Like how many employees are part of that?
We have a large global talent acquisition organization at IBM, and it's important to have some context to what we did last year. IBM hired tens of thousands of employees. So that gives you an idea of the scale we're working on. And that was in about 150 different countries. And so, again, we've got to be ready for the ebbs and flows because we are a hardware, software, and services company. We're looking for a wide variety of skills. We also are looking at different labor dynamics that may be existing externally. In some countries, there may be a shortage of software skills, but there may be a glut of consulting skills, right? So we also have different needs within our business. As attrition goes up in one area and down another, our talent acquisition team has to be able to pivot to where the demand is on the business side, but also has to be ready to deal with the complexity of what it looks like on the supply side in any given region.
So interesting. And of course, the whole talent acquisition role has, it hasn't really changed, but it's just the dynamics, the difficulty of it has just been so, well, everything is about the pandemic, right? But I mean, if our job wasn't hard enough before, it's really challenging now. So is your TA team, is it like a centralized services type of a structure, or is it structured through your different business units?
So we do have it centralized within human resources, and this is really critical for us. That does allow us to maintain that ebb and flow in demand that I spoke about, right? So we can pivot capability. I am also a very firm believer that talent acquisition is a core discipline within HR. You know, I made the joke before that a lot of people think, oh, I can do talent acquisition. It is a skill set that I believe you've got to learn, you can become a deep expert in. And so I'm proud that it sits as a specialty under HR. And it's not just being farmed out to whoever seems to have bandwidth or whoever can focus on it right now. I think doing it right is very important, particularly in the labor market we're in.
Absolutely. And it's always interesting when you talk to human resources professionals and how much they talk about how they hate to recruit and they love employee relations. And those of us who love to recruit would rather die than do employee relations.
Exactly. So, you know, it is a specialty. It is a domain that I think particularly in the labor environment that we're in and the amount of HR professionals that are getting some experience in talent acquisition, I think it's going to be here to stay for a while.
Mm-hmm. I think so too. So as we talk about this global shortage of talent, one of the things that I talk with a lot of organizations about and they're sharing with me is that companies are moving towards this skill first versus experience role. But you guys are doing something really different. And I thought that was fascinating. And I think we can learn a lot from that. But that, you know, a couple of bullets that I pulled out is that you're looking at skills over degrees approach in response to the shortage of skilled tech workers. So talk to us a little bit about that whole concept and how you got to that, because I don't think there are many people out there doing this.
Yeah, so I'm glad you asked about this. And this is something that certainly is helping our talent acquisition team relieve some of the pressure and open the aperture of where they source candidates from. But to be honest with you, it's something that IBM has been passionate about for the better part of a decade when we really think about the responsibility we have to the communities that we operate in. So for us, a skills-first hiring approach isn't just about, many companies will talk about, making sure that you're leading with skills in a job description. It includes all of that. But we are actually taking a deeper look about what the peer requirements are for each of the jobs in our organization. And we're doing it because if you look at the United States as an example, 62% of the adult population over the age of 25 does not have a bachelor's degree. Mm-hmm. And if you think about that, having a four-year degree requirement also exacerbates inequality in the workforce. It will rule out 70% of Latinx people, 73% of Indigenous people, and 77% of Black adults in the country, in this country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so what we are doing here is we are opening the aperture to ensure that we are going to a broad pool. We're not just artificially saying, wait a minute, is a degree required for that job or not? But we're mm-hmm. really deeply looking to say, what are the skills required? Let's take talent acquisition as an example. Some of the best talent acquisition professionals may not have a good degree from Cornell, but they may have spent years in retail where interviewing, sourcing, hiring candidates is some of their deep experience. You know, you can think similarly about cybersecurity skills. Many of our veterans that have spent time in the military may not have a degree, but they are deep experts around cybersecurity. The way we think about this is, what are the core requirements for the job? And some of us may have gotten those core requirements at a university in a four-year program, but others of us may have gotten them a variety of other ways. And so for us, this is opening the aperture of where we find candidates, even for some of our most technical roles. And so if you look at IBM today, 20% of our U.S. employees do not have a bachelor's degree. And right now, if you go to our website and look at our open jobs, 50% of them do not require a four-year college degree. So this is something we're very passionate about. We've been on a journey, as I said, for, you know, a little, almost a decade. And we're going to continue this focus to ensure that we're meeting candidates and ensuring, you know, the right economic opportunity for all.
Well, I think it's key, and I think a lot of organizations can definitely learn from the work that you all are doing. Now, I also understand that you have structured learning programs in tandem with all of this, and an apprentice program, and I guess the thing I saw was Netflix for learning, as you put it. Maybe tell us a little bit about how that works.
Yeah, there are two pieces to this. So in addition to, you know, finding maybe some candidates that have come from non-traditional backgrounds but really have skills to do the job, we also acknowledge that there are many potential candidates out there that may have some skills to do the job, but that they might need a more formal program to help bridge the gap on the remaining skills. So just like what would have been done in some of the skilled trades, electricians, et cetera, IBM does have an apprenticeship program. We've committed over $250 million to this program. And it's a 12 to 24 month program that pairs apprentices with an IBM mentor. We work on projects while at the same time completing a comprehensive learning plan. And we're doing this in areas such as security and cloud, where candidly, even the available candidates coming from universities are not enough supply to fill the demand mm-hmm. that organizations have. It's an earn and learn model. So, you know, apprentices can avoid student loan debt. You know, they learn these tech skills while also then getting paid for them. And roughly 90% of our apprentice graduates then become full-time IBMers. So it's a great program then to give them a longer-term career with the company.
So do you partner with high schools, with the community college to identify these apprentice candidates?
Yeah, so apprentice candidates come from a wide variety of areas. And as you can see, we're kind of opening the aperture here. So certainly we focus on community college, where some individuals may have taken some coursework and the apprenticeship program helps them bridge that gap. We also do partner with high schools. We have a program that IBM founded called PTAC, which allows high school students in underserved areas to graduate with a high school degree, but also an associate degree. So in some of those cases, those individuals are coming straight into IBM. Others are then furthering their education with apprenticeship or sometimes even a four-year degree. But we also will find that apprenticeships are filled with candidates from a wide variety of areas. Some of them are, like I mentioned, come to us from the military. So they are veterans that are using this to bridge into civilian employment. We've even had people that are doing career changes, a Starbucks barista, a nurse. So we do get these candidates from a lot of different places, and it gives them an ability to learn these tech skills while making that transition.
Interesting. Well, hang on, Nicole. We have to stop here, but coming up in the second part of my conversation with Nicole Lamoureux, the Chief Human Resources Officer at IBM, Nicole shares some advice for employers when welcoming back new moms to the office.
You need to make sure that you're giving them resources and programs to deal with those difficulties. It might be childcare. It might be time off if necessary. And that's really, really critical.
This has been Revolutionizing Recruitment with Kathleen Duffy. To connect with Kathleen or to learn more about recruitment research, go to duffygroup.com.